This is WordPress Weekly, the show dedicated to all things WordPress. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Sarah Gooding.
Welcome to episode 151 of WordPress Weekly for Friday, June 13th, 2014. I am your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Marcus Couch, the plugin guru. Marcus, how are you doing this week?
Doing fantastic. Another great show on tap here, Friday the 13th.
Spooky Friday the 13th.
Yeah, I wish we had some great, you know, spooky music, Michael Jackson Thriller or something like that, you know, but
yeah, to go with the
no
movie.
Such luck.
Now, I know you've been asking on Twitter. I've retweeted you, and it looks like nobody has any WordPress-specific superstitions.
Nope, nobody. Just not using the admin username is one superstition that we got back, but yeah, there's a lot. I only install WordPress in the dead of night. That's my superstition.
Or is that the only time you're awake?
No, that's not the only time I'm awake. It's the only time I have enough time to do those kinds of functions without client calls in my ear.
All right, so hope everybody has a great Friday the 13th out there. Also, it's a full moon, put the two together, and oh boy, you know, hospitals, a late night shift, it's going to get crazy.
Yeah.
So we have a lot to talk about this week, and one of our first stories that we're going to talk about, I actually have a representative on of the project. It's called VersionPress. I published an article about this today on the Tavern, and what VersionPress is, or its aim, is to bring version control to the masses. So what version control is have it built into WordPress so that if something happens or something changes that you don't like, you just click an undo button and the change is removed and you're back to normal, which sounds really cool. And there's already a couple of different ways you can accomplish this. In fact, most developers sort of have their own version control systems in place, but for the average end user, they typically don't have anything with regards to version control in place. Maybe the closest they have is installing WordPress and their setup on a local server using MAP or LAMP and doing things that way, or maybe they're using something like WP Engine or a web host that has a setup to where you can have a staging site, development site, and then a production site. But for the common end user, we don't really have anything in the ways of easy version control. So I've actually brought on Boric Bernard, who is one of the two developers from the Czech Republic, who is starting a campaign right now, a crowdfunding campaign for the VersionPress project. And Bernard, thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me. Hello.
So where you're at right now, it's about 9 p.m., so that's pretty cool. It's only about 3 p.m. here. But so tell us a little bit of background behind how you and your partner came up with the idea to put this project together.
Well, I guess we are both software developers, so version control is something very natural to us. We use it on almost every project that we do and can't really imagine living without it. So when we get to do some WordPress site, there is a kind of imbalance, because suddenly part of the truth is on the file system, part of the truth about the site is in the database. It is kind of hard to combine those together, version that properly, etc. So I personally always wanted to find something like VersionPress, and because I didn't really succeed, so I thought we might well implement it.
Now, you guys have a prototype. There's nothing publicly available. I know you have a prototype that you're working on. And according to the project page, what it would do is it would allow site-wide version control, and it would keep the whole site in like a Git repository, enabling things like site-wide reverts, safe updates, and easy staging. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. What's, I would say, unique about VersionPress is that it version controls not only files but also database, but in a clever way. We don't version it as a whole. We just extract some important information from the database and store it in a Git repository. And from that information, we can restore the database at every historic version of the site, exactly how it looked at that point in time.
And your plugin, the prototype plugin, allows all the data and everything to be controlled on the local site, so the site administrator controls the data and where it goes, correct? It's not a service.
Exactly. It's not a service, and it's not planned to be service. We want it to be local. We want it to be working on users' PCs or servers, sorry. So it's really just something that you install as a plugin to your site and have all the benefits of version control locally.
So the crowdfunding campaign, which is ongoing right now, the goal is $30,000. How did you come up with that number, and what would that money be used for?
Yeah. The main thing for us is to be realistic about this, because we want to get WordPress running everywhere where plain WordPress can. So this means, for example, implementing some Git commands in pure PHP. So that alone is a big undertaking. Furthermore, we needed to overcome many difficulties. There were many situations where we just thought that we will not be able to implement WordPress. So it is really something that is on the limit of what the technology can do. It's because database versioning is a very hard theoretical problem, and we're only able to solve it because we know the structure of WordPress tables, etc. So it's a very technically ambitious project, and the main thing for us, the main goal for us, is to see it built and living. We will also need to support various third-party plugins, so that is another thing that the money will go for.
Okay, and the project is you have until the end of June to receive the campaign funds. Now, obviously, the biggest question that I've had, I wrote about this, we received some criticism, there's already people in the comments. On the campaign page, it says you are not really clear as to whether this will be either free or commercial, or whether it will be open sourced or not. And obviously, with the WordPress community, if you choose to not openly have the plugin be GPL license or GPL user license that's compatible with the GPL, the WordPress community will pretty much snub their noses at you. They're not going to pay attention to you, and chances are you won't get your funding. So have you made any decisions yet on whether it will be GPL, whether it will be open sourced?
Yeah. What we would like ideally see happen is to some big sponsor appear and fund the development so that we could make it free for everyone, or obviously GPL would be the best thing for everyone. However, if there is no such big sponsor, we still need to have some realistic business model. And because we want WordPress to be something that you install on your own server, and we don't want to run a service that would somehow store your data, that means that, we need some realistic funding. So we're not sure how this will work out. The campaign has been out only for 2 days, so it's, from our point of view, it is really early to talk about this. Yeah, of course, we are aware of this issue. We would very much like this to be GPL, but we can't promise that at the moment.
Okay. That's going to be tough going, because I know, I think you're working on a blog post right now that sort of clarifies your position on this, but I know a lot of people, you know, we've already had one comment on the article, at least from John Paris, that says, what your plans are basically for the licensing, because people in the WordPress community want to support, and they don't mind donating for a cause that is going to, you know, be aligned with the open source values of the WordPress project itself. But if a lot of people give money now and then it turns out to be closed source, that's going to make a lot of people mad because they thought that maybe they were contributing to something that is going to be open source just like WordPress itself.
Yeah, I should know that right below the right above the campaign there is a notice, and always been there, that the licensing thing is not set in stone yet. So we hope that our contributors, and we have quite a few so far, have read that, and as you said, we're working on a blog post that will clear this up, and we have also made changes to the website and the text that clarifies how things are with licensing. So hopefully no one will make false contribution.
And on the other side of this, just to play devil's advocate, there are others like myself who licensing really doesn't matter. I would love to just have a plugin that has this functionality that can revert client changes, bad copy, any of those things that don't require me to then have to restore some kind of a backup or something like that that's a week old, where you might have some sort of a content lapse. So in my perspective, I'd love to contribute to this just to see, to make sure that this plugin sees the light of day so that I can use it myself.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's one way to look at it, but I'm telling you, if you do not, I mean, I contributed to WordPressTavern.com, and I'm telling people all the time that want me to review their plugins or talk about their themes, and I look at them, and they're not, we're not allowed, it's sort of a policy, we're not allowed to advertise and promote things that are not aligned with the license that WordPress has, GPL or something that's compatible with the GPL. So although the choice is ultimately up to you as to which way you want to go, if you do not go GPL, I think you're really putting yourself at a serious disadvantage, and many of the most well-known and respected people in this WordPress community won't even give you the light of day just based on that fact alone.
Yeah,
I mean, and that's just the way it is.
I hear what you're saying. We don't take this lightly, believe me. Yeah, we will publish something that will hopefully make this more clear to everyone.
And so for some people who really wanted to know, how this, right now it's not available to the public. There's a campaign going. If the campaign's successful, obviously the whole idea would be that these two and maybe someone else would come along and just hammer on the development, and mm-hmm. eventually we'd have a finished product that users could use, whether that's free or commercial. That's still up in the air. Exactly. And it's just, I've been told, at least on Twitter, that there are already a number of plugins that exist that do version control just fine, that this idea is nothing new. But when I looked up version control in the WordPress.org plugin repository, I saw a bunch of plugins that do version control, but it mostly had to do with content and syncing to GitHub through revisions and content, things of that nature. I didn't see anything that was really site-wide like this plugin aims to do.
Before there was the idea to build WordPress, we have, of course, looked ourselves for solutions that would, for us as WordPress admins, allow to do proper version control. As you say, we haven't found anything that would go as far as WordPress tries to do. So I agree with that. In my opinion, there is nothing quite comparable to this.
And I know I've seen some comments on Twitter already saying that this sounds really cool, and we have, version control for files is one thing, but when you get involved with the database, that's, and as you mentioned, that makes things a lot more complex. Really, as you start abstracting things as well.
Yeah, that is true. That's why, well, the goal is quite ambitious, and honestly, if we don't reach that, there's not much point doing that, because we know from our estimates that we will not be able to build it properly.
So if the funding goal is not reached by the end of the month, do you think that you'll continue work developing this? It will just happen at a much slower rate, or will you just sort of give up on it?
Yeah, maybe if we reach something like, 10-20%, then it will be probably better to call it a day. But if you reach something like, 60-70, that will be something to think about.
Okay, yeah, I'm right there with you. So, Marcus, I know that you sort of work in development projects yourself.
Yes.
What do you think of just the idea? I mean, aside from WordPress, but what do you think about the idea? I personally think that something like this, and it doesn't necessarily have to be WordPress, but easy version control for the common end user to be able to just revert changes and revert things that, you know, either broke the site or whatever. You can go back to a previous state easily within WordPress. Mm-hmm. I think that could at some point is going to be a core feature in WordPress, but until then, something like VersionPress, what do you think of that idea?
Well, I like the idea. I would like to see some sort of a, how do you put this, backdoor kind of safe mode link within VersionPress that through some sort of URL that has maybe a password string or maybe it takes me to a shell style login where it allows me, if I screw the site up, to literally go back in through just one URL and restore a particular version. I don't know if that's in the works. I've seen safe mode plugins that do somewhat of the same thing. They just basically disable all the plugins and let you log in. But, you know, for me, this is invaluable. I'll just share a personal project that I was just involved in, a two-month design phase that essentially we left in the hands of someone else that worked within the company as far as the design, and I just handled all of the SEO and marketing end. And by the time the site was ready to migrate, they had already gone through three programmers, and some of them tried to even modify core files and, you know, core theme files and things like that. So reverting back specific changes would be incredible. Can I also ask, is this a tiered thing? Like, can I say leave the content alone but revert back specific plugin installations or things like that?
Exactly. So for the geeks out there, what we're really doing is we're depending on features of Git, which is behind the scenes. So whatever Git supports, we can support via user interface. So Git can do selective reverts of something, of some changes done, I don't know, 10 days ago, while keeping something that I've done yesterday. So totally, that is possible.
That is a great point and great question because that's fantastic because then let's say something a few days ago broke and you just discovered it and yet you've published, I don't know, 10 or 15 posts and you don't want to have the whole site go back to just that day, you know, as a snapshot because then you lose all that content. It's like restoring a backup. I mean, it's really cool that you'd be able to just revert that one change and everything would be back to normal and you still keep your content.
Exactly.
Can you also do it based on a user? So can you kind of rewind a specific user's changes to the system as well?
Well, I can imagine that is one of the features that we will implement. It's not there at the moment, but well, I can see nothing that would prevent this.
So I just want to say, Boric, thank you very much for being on the show and sort of giving us more explanation in terms of what the project is. I strongly hope you consider as soon as possible sort of putting up the clarification on which license or how you're going to go about that, because I think that will strongly affect whether you get major support from the WordPress community or not. Mm-hmm. But the idea itself is very cool. It goes way beyond just content and being able to revert, you know, specific changes, whether that's an installed theme or plugin. And I'm at the very least, I'm happy to have been exposed to this idea. And you know, I really would like to see something like this see the light of day, whether it received funding or not. But obviously, it'd be a little easier for you guys if you had the funding. But best of luck to you. And is there anything you'd like to say, like maybe to the audience or to the community, before I let you go?
Yeah, at this point, it is really important for us to get the word out. So if you can, if you like the project, and if you could share this with your, I don't know, Twitter followers or Facebook friends, we'd be really grateful. Thank you.
Bort, thank you very much for being on the show again.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Oops, have a cough button there. So that was Bork. He is one of the members of the VersionPress team. And Marcus, what do you? We've talked about it, and we've talked about it on Twitter. I mean, not to really get knee deep into this whole licensing thing again. Mm-hmm. Even if they decided to not go with the GPL licensing of the plugin. based on derivatives and some other things that could get involved here with code and interacting with WordPress, it could end up being GPL anyways, whether you know they like it or not.
Based on concept, yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, based on derivatives and using PHP functions and things, you know, interfacing with WordPress that way. I mean, I just hope that all that stuff is avoided. Come out and just, you know, just GPL license it like every other WordPress plugin almost. And if you, I mean, I this is something I would pay for. I think a lot of other people would pay for. So I could see the funding as just a means as to getting to a certain point to develop it. And those people have early access to licenses of the program, and then they could sell it from that point on. Once it's a finished project, they could sell it. I think people would be able would pay for it. And I think that would be the really the cool way to go about this instead of the whole licensing being up in the air, because that just I don't think they'll reach their funding or get as much support as they could if they don't clarify the licensing really quick.
Well, I agree. That's a segmentation of the audience and, you know, potential funding audience and down the road buying audience as far as users that you could, you know, you don't want to alienate as far as those hardcore people. But then again, you know, so much of WordPress is end user people. It's not necessarily the hardcore that, you know, really have dramatic concerns about that type of stuff.
Well, what you're saying reminds me of a conversation back during the whole GPL debates of commercial themes, where I remember AD of WooThemes at the time, during one of the first major GPL debates in the comments, said, "Hey, look, our customers couldn't give a flip about the license. All they care about is a good product that works, and they want support about it." And, you know, deep down, that could be true, but obviously at the end of the day, due to pressures and everything else, everybody is sort of now aligned with the GPL. But, I mean, you know, you're right. I mean, I bet you there's a lot of people who, you know, the license, you know, they couldn't give a flip about it. They just want something that works and works well and solves their problem and has support.
Yeah, let's take a step back for a second. Don't we already complicate things enough in WordPress for the end user? You know, well, I mean, really, we got to get into that. It seems like then they should be able to fulfill that. And sometimes it takes funding. And, you know, there are other options that this could have been just a plugin that interacted with, a service online, you know, that like CMS Commander or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, what license the plugin is shouldn't be the end user or the consumer's problem. It should be the developer's, really. I mean, end users should not have anything to worry about when it comes to the licensing. But then again, we're sort of, you know, all these years sort of trying to teach people and customers, hey, you know, only support GPL products because you know that those developers are giving you the freedoms that WordPress gives them. You know, just this whole GPL thing, I don't want to really... I sort of opened the door here, but it's sort of a Pandora's box.
Yeah, you're bound to it in a different sense than I am. You know, I approach it from more of a corporate and a functionality standpoint than carrying the WordPress flag, so to speak.
Yeah, well, I suppose. So let's move on to a different story, so I don't have to talk about those three letters anymore. Sarah Gooding earlier this week wrote a great post discussing the subject on comments and why comments still matter. Earlier this year, CopyBlogger sort of set the blogosphere ablaze when they made the controversial decision to turn off comments. And the announcement cited the burden of moderation, spam, and the availability of sort of other conversation outposts, whether that be Facebook or Twitter, as the main reasons for closing down the comments. It also, the move also gave the impression that CopyBlogger had in many ways outgrown comments. And so there's a great, she dives into moderation and the reasons why removing comments is a bad thing. And just a great post overall. A lot of people were quoting different aspects of it on the web. I know there's the one quote here about social networks come and go, but your blog is forever, which is a pretty neat way of looking at things. And as far as I'm concerned, with my experience, comments are a beautiful thing. They are. I've always embraced them. I've always made time to moderate and administrate them. I liken it to Paul Harvey. If anybody remembers the late Paul Harvey, he used to do a story and then do some commercials, or later on in the day, used to say, and the rest of the story. I kind of look at comments as the rest of the story on particular blog posts, and it's sort of disheartening to see that there's this trend and even a slew of plugins now in the WordPress directory on just disabling comments altogether. Do you look at comments the same way, Marcus? I mean, I know comments aren't for every site, but for the ones that sort of can embrace their audience and converse with their audience, and they can, you know, one helps each other out. You know, like Sarah says, comments can be the true gold of the internet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a couple different takes. Business-wise, as far as a business perspective, I see why those no comment type plugins come into play, because they're unneeded. Any interaction that any small business or any corporation for that matter deems out there as worthy typically takes place on their Google Places page or Facebook or something like that. They just don't typically engage their audience in the same way that they would elsewhere. So that's why they would disable that. As far as personal blogs, things like that, interesting. I've talked to somebody actually at WordCamp Orange County last week, where they had discussed pay per comment, where somebody puts a dollar in as a donation, and then they can leave their comment.
Nah, I don't think so. That's not cool.
Well, it was a charitable organization.
Okay.
It was like a leave your own message of goodwill or something like that, you know, and donate while you can do it. So that was very interesting. I've also reviewed recently a plugin that creates with BuddyPress a forum group, a forum, or BBPress rather, a forum based entirely around the post, so that you have to be a registered user on the site with BuddyPress in order to interact. That's got some merit to it, because then everything has interaction. So, you know, maybe that's a little bit different than what your typical comment cycle is. It sort of takes all of that out of the equation, and with one click, you can see, you know, where else somebody commented and where else they participate. So one comment could spike a year's worth of discussion, because it's more of a forum comment rather than, you know, just a comment itself. So that would mean people get notification about other users talking about it. You'd have, who knows what would spawn from that. So maybe that's an elevation from what we typically do regarding comments. But that's two sides of the coin there. So you've got the corporate end, and then you've got more of the creatives, blogger / journalistic end. So there's applications for both.
And I notice a lot of people in the comments, pun intended, discuss the whole moderation in Akismet and how it's just not... it's just not helping in the spam war anymore, because spammers have modified their techniques and things of that nature. And they were spending so much time moderating and going through and emptying the spam queue and things of that nature. Well, earlier this year, just as a little tip, in the newest version of Akismet, Akismet 3.0, actually, they have this option in there now called silently discard the worst and most pervasive spam so that you'll never see it, which is really neat. It sort of reminds me of a feature that I have in a plugin we use on the Tavern called Cookies for Comments, where it determines whether it's spam or not, and it'll remove it before it even reaches the Akismet service. And that has substantially decreased the amount of spam that ends up in the queue, sort of like a first line of defense in front of Akismet. But if you're just going to use Akismet, it has a feature sort of built in. And that's really cool, because it'll really decrease the amount of spam that's caught up in the queue that you can empty, and it'll automatically discard it for you, and it'll use less resources on the server for having to scan all those comments that are for spam. But as a side note on this whole turning comments off and go, you know, if you want to comment, go talk, discuss it on your blog. A few years ago, back in 2006, 2007, something really cool in blogging, it was trackbacks and pingbacks, and those were really cool in terms of discovery of other people talking about your articles. And in a way, those articles linking back to another article were sort of like comments, but, you know, in the blog post form. Unfortunately, just like comments, they've been abused, and, you know, chances are nowadays that you probably don't get a trackback or pingback that's to an actual site. It's usually spam-oriented, and now most of the sites have that turned off. So now between that being turned off and comments turned off, you're...
And I use the social plugin from MailChimp that does broadcasting to Facebook pages and Twitter and things, and now I'm getting pingback notifications on people that just retweet things. And now it's like, do I approve this? And now there's a link to their Twitter in there, even though they just retweeted it, and that's all they did. You know, how do you make that determination? So there's still, even though we thought that there'd be this removal of that layer of anonymous commenting, and we implement more of a Facebook/Twitter strategy, now those things are starting to kind of spoil the soup as well.
Yeah, I just don't like it, because sometimes if you turn off comments on a site, it's almost like saying, hey, everything I publish here is right. No need to question my authority. This is it's just going to be my soapbox, and if you have something to say, you can't say it here. But, I mean, ultimately, that's the website administrator's choice if they want to do that. Typically, I find that I stay away from sites that have commenting disabled. For me, comments are very important. I actually go there immediately after I read the article. Sometimes I'll read them first, and that'll kind of give me insight as to whether I should even bother reading the article. But like I said, it's especially on sites like the Tavern, comments are incredibly important, and they allow us, most of the time, they give us perspectives that we didn't even consider thinking of, or different. They add parts to the original story. Just in certain situations, comments are really the true gold of the internet, and I just would like to see more sites just not outright disable them altogether. But, you know, use a couple tools and sort of work your way through them, and hopefully it's a trend that doesn't catch on to everyone and everywhere. And if you want to talk about an article, you got to do it on Facebook and Twitter, which has already happened, but it would suck if that was the only recourse.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm trying desperately to get off of those things, Twitter and Facebook, as far as content goes. Because then you just become a part of the cycle. And the cycle is, you know, Facebook is an environment of people that don't typically create anything. They're just regurgitating links out and retweeting, you know, whatever. And it's not an environment that encourages a lot of feedback, you know. It's just a lot. It's really just a copy paste world over there. So, if you can keep everything internal, you know, like you do at the Tavern, that is just so much more valuable as far as growing the internal community.
Right, and at least if I have all the comments and conversation on my site through comments in my database on my site, I control that data. I have the odds of me being able to archive that and having that there, you know, to access in the future to go back on is a lot higher than, say, data being stored on these social networks, which could disappear. And if that's the only place where you're conversing about specific articles, you know, that's a huge, you know, that's pretty detrimental to a lot of stories out on the web, that you're not able to access those conversations.
And not to mention the fact that if it's not being done now, I'm sure someday in the future it will be. Sites like Facebook will use those comments and the text contained within to advertise and market to people.
Yeah, if it's not already being done.
Look, it's just a keyword density search, right?
Right.
Who participates in that page? What comments did they make? And how do we put a banner on their little sidebar?
So as for me and the Tavern, we will continue to have comments enabled. just because they're that important. Really cool. And maybe some of the other sites out there, after experimenting with comments being disabled, maybe they'll have a change of heart and they'll turn them back on. I hope so. So other huge news this week, Clef, the two-factor or two-step authentication service that's passwordless, has made a very important partnership with Softaculous. And for those who don't know, Softaculous is a script installer similar to Fantastico that is used on different web hosts across the world. And what this partnership has means is that it would allow web hosts to enable automated WordPress installs from Softaculous to have Clef support out of the box. So what this basically means is that for hosts that are part of the program, and if you're using a web host and you're using Softaculous, you do an auto install of WordPress, and if the web host has enabled it, you could have free two-step authentication for that WordPress install, which is very neat. And I think this gives Clef an opportunity to really expand their reach into the WordPress ecosystem, and I think a lot of WordPress sites will be safer because of this sort of two-step authentication out of the box.
Well, yeah. I mean, as if they're adding to host cPanels the ability, as you do the one-click install for WordPress, just have a checkbox that says, would you like to have, you know, mobile-enabled two-step authentication? Yes, no. Who's not going to go for that?
Actually, the web host that can configure Softaculous, there's now a setting in there. In fact, I've seen one of the plugins or something that is installed with Softaculous or on a WordPress install, I think, is limit login attempts. So I think one of the other plugins or something that's automatically added will be Clef, and the default value web host can turn to enabled, so that when the auto-install of WordPress from Softaculous is installed, not only is Clef, but also any other plugins that are enabled will be there right out of the box, which is pretty neat. And Clef has also announced that they've created a program called SHIP, or Safer Host Incentive Program. So what this means is Clef will be made available for free for a host to use on its own domain if they make two-factor authentication an option for their customers. And the service will remain free for sites with less than 100 people logging in. And little did I know, after visiting the Clef plugin page and their website, it seems you have become an unofficial spokesperson for the company.
Unofficial is right.
Your reviews, you have a lot of good things to say about Clef. I mean, you've used it and you have experience with it.
Well, I'll tell you, because I tried a different plugin before I tried Clef that was called LaunchKey that claimed to do the same thing, and it just never worked. Hmm. It didn't work for me. I'm sure there were tons of people that got it to work. I don't know, but I had nothing but problems. And then I tried Clef after that, and I was up and running in 60 seconds. So, I mean, if that doesn't get your attention, nothing will. So, yeah, when I wrote that article on the Tavern, it was out of necessity that I was looking for something like that that didn't require – it was a specific client need that, you know, we needed to get them off the phase. Many, many years ago, I had a friend who worked for Motorola, and he carried around with him this pager that had just a little digital LCD display on it that – had a number, and every, I don't know, 12 seconds or something like that, the number would change. And so when he would log in from home, he'd have to also put in that authentication number that was on his pager at that particular second.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been aware of this technology for well over, you know, 12, 13 years. So to now see this come in sort of a pseudo QR code type fashion where somebody can just take their smartphone and click it and boom, you're logged in. That's got amazing potential, because then you don't, you know, you take out any door that anybody has as far as getting into your site that's unwanted. It does things also like If there are three or four people or three or four users that are on your site creating content, or, you know, and you see somebody on there that you don't want, you can literally from your smartphone boot them. So it's interactive and it does a lot of things. And it's an unofficial endorsement, I guess you could say, but I'm a fan and I'm a user of it.
How about some of these stats here? Clef is being used by hedge funds to protect almost $2 billion in managed wealth. Clef has doubled in size every 6 weeks since the beginning of the year, and the Clef plugin is being downloaded more times each day than any other two-factor plugin is in a week. Sounds to me like they're doing something right over there.
Well, they are. I mean, it takes a lot to impress me that fast as far as a plugin goes, but as far as the infrastructure that they've built and the functionality and the participation in the community, this is an ideal plugin developer and service.
And when I asked Byron Brennan, the CEO of Clef, whether they tried to work with Fantastico first or as well with Softaculous, he replied that they've been working with Softaculous for a while to make this happen. They really love the product, and it's just been a matter of timing and development resources. We haven't talked to any of the other installers, but we'll definitely be looking to work with more of them soon, end quote. Boy, how huge would that be to sort of improve the baseline of WordPress security if they were able to have two-factor authentication for both Fantastico and Softaculous WordPress auto installs?
It'd be huge. Absolutely huge.
Yeah, it'd be a win-win for win-win-win-win-win. You know, win for everybody.
Yeah, and then even pop it into places like GoDaddy and, you know, that's in some of their kind of closed circuit, FAW cPanels that they offer, and you really got something there.
Hey, speaking of GoDaddy, they're looking for $100 million as they have filed some paperwork to go public. And I know you linked to this story here in TechCrunch. Mm-hmm. I was reading through it, and I got to tell you, all these numbers and terms and figures and acronyms, I can't make heads or tails of it other than it looks like GoDaddy has had large losses, but they've had revenue in the first quarter of 2014 of $320 million, and it's up from $262 million in the same period of a year ago. So that's a 22.14% increase. So it'll be interesting to see if when they go public, if investors like those numbers, or if all the losses through the GAAP cause investors to sort of be shy of investing in GoDaddy. But does that surprise you to see a company like GoDaddy finally going public?
No, it doesn't. They've been around a long, long time, and they've spent a lot of money on their image and even crafting it from sort of their initial beginnings of sort of the risque commercials at the Super Bowl to, you know,
yeah, the GoDaddy girl. You
know, lighter stuff with, you know, Danica Patrick and some of the other people that they've had. Oops, sorry. You know, so there's a lot that they've done. And then even more recently, taken on more of an approach of, like, business, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny, back in the day, I mean, their image was Bob Parsons, a real tough, manly, you know, man's man, and, you know, going, what is it, elephant hunting or something down in
He was like the Renaissance.
And, you know, we had these sexy women, the GoDaddy girls, these sexy Super Bowl ads. And sort of amazing how I think at one point that, like, caught on. It sort of made them cool. But it didn't take long after that for everybody to just pile on the bandwagon of, well, you know, this just ain't cool, you know.
Yeah, what am I getting for this?
This whole image. And yeah. I have mentioned this before, that the CEO change, you know, the GoDaddy website itself, they've sort of gotten out of that whole era, and their pages have become simpler to browse, at least for me. Mm-hmm. And they're going through some changes, and they're trying to change that image to be more of a reputable company. And I like everything I've seen so far in terms of their changes.
Yeah, and I'll say something about GoDaddy. You know, we love to hate them as far as the technology and things, but, you know, when things do break down, I love the fact that I can call support at 3 a.m. and talk to a guy from America. You know, typically they're in Iowa. you know, in the middle of the night, and, you know, they're always friendly and courteous and, you know, generally help you through your problem. So there's something to be said for that, too.
Yeah, we've already covered this on the Tavern about a month or so ago, but if you want support, you're either going to have to call them or you're going to have to do live chat because they recently got rid of their email and ticket-based support system. And I ended up giving them a test run just to see how it would work, and I got to tell you, I was very surprised in how smooth and quick the phone support was. And I also did it as a means to see if they would upsell me anything, because the big rumor was, oh, GoDaddy will try and upsell you anything at any time they can. And he didn't upsell me on anything, and it was just a very, very nice experience. A heck of a lot better than the live chat, which I had to wait 35 minutes as opposed to 6 in order to get support on the live chat. But I know recently they've sort of made some changes. They've really added people to their live chat, so hopefully it's better. But I was very surprised on the phone support.
Yeah, my feeling is get off the computer for a second and get on the phone and talk to a person. You know, and the only time I've ever been kind of upsold is something that's about to expire. You know, they just remind you. That's all. They don't really.
Yeah, that's all they did. In fact, I called them up. I already knew this, but I called them up because my domain was coming up for expiration within a month, and I says. And I just called him. I says, yeah, can you let me know when it's expiring? And because I thought maybe they would upsell me on web hosting or something or whatever else to go with that domain. And they didn't. They just told me and they said, hey, we could do it for you over the phone. Would you like to do it? I says, no, I'll do it myself. They says, okay. And then that was that. You know, it was quick, painless, easy, and I was off the phone. I was very surprised by the great experience I had.
Yeah, and it's interesting because now they've started to adopt WordPress managed hosting over there too. So I wonder if that's also probably a good employment opportunity for WordPress experts to work for GoDaddy, providing WordPress support. Who knows?
Possibly, but there's already a slew of companies out there like Maintain and WP SiteCare dedicated to just supporting WordPress clients. I think they work with WebHost and sort of like just a whole WordPress support center. So they already have things like that. But we'll see when obviously, I guess somebody, probably the CEO or somebody, will be at the NASDAQ or stock exchange to ring the bell, because usually isn't that what happens when a big company does IPO?
Oh, sure. They'll have Danica Patrick and Jean-Claude Van Damme do the splits while he rings the bell over the big balcony.
So they'll do that, and we'll have to see how it performs, at least on opening day and a couple weeks after that, sort of get an idea as to what shareholders or investors are thinking. So with that said, that pretty much covers a lot of the stories that have gone on this week. Marcus, why don't you round it out with the plug-in picks of the week that you have?
Absolutely. Well, one project that I've been working on is Facebook tracking, and typically that has to be done kind of on an entire WordPress installation basis, but I found a plugin that just came out called Facebook Conversion Pixel. It allows you to add the Facebook conversion pixels to posts, pages, custom post types, anything you want on a post by post basis, which is pretty cool because then you can make landing pages and things like that. And what this lets you do is, if you have any advertising or things like that, it lets you track your goals to see how effective the return on investment for your Facebook marketing has been. Really nice plugin. Another one that is pretty cool is called Page Specific Style Sheets. Now, what this does is, in the page or post, it provides another box in the editor that allows you to add post-specific CSS style sheets. So if you want something to change only on one particular post, this is great because then you don't have to clutter up the style.css files and, you know, put exclusions for every single page and things like that. This allows you to do it on the fly, adjust the CSS on a page-by-page or post-by-post basis, and then output the results with just preview mode. Really, pretty cool.
Yeah, talk about granular control there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, sometimes there are needs in which a full WordPress installation and all that other stuff may just be a little too much if we just want to show somebody what something looks like, right? So there is a new plugin out that I just tested out. It looks really cool. It worked very, very well. Let's just say you wanted to take a snapshot of something on your WordPress site and send it over as an HTML file. Well, now you can, because there's a plugin called Download HTML TinyMCE Button. And it will instantly, with one click of the button, let you download the entire post with the theme parameters, all of the pop-ups, all that stuff. It basically kind of scrapes a full HTML version, and you download it with just one click.
Now, will I be able to... What if... This is I don't know if this kind of question off the top of my head, but what I'm thinking of, the use case is a preview of a post, and I'm able to click a button and download that and send it to somebody, and they could see the previewed post.
Yes.
Would that work?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So if I were working on a stage site and I wanted the client to be able to see a particular landing page, I could literally make the snapshot of an HTML file that I could then send them, and then it outputs rendered with that on their end, and that doesn't require any kind of password protection, anything like that. You could literally share it on a Dropbox. Doesn't require anything but an internet connection.
I'll have to test that out to see how that works. I'm curious. I'm curious to see if the people, the receiver of the file, when they open it, if it looks just like it does on my site, but in their browser, how that works.
It should. It just basically saves the content in a new HTML file that you can do with what you choose.
So before we get out of here,
I'm sorry, you'd have to test it out on a couple browsers, but from my testing, it looked pretty good.
I have to give that a shot. So before we get out of here on this spooky Friday the 13th edition of the show, and I go buy a lottery ticket because, you know, Friday the 13th, that's the luckiest day of the year. There's a slew of WordPress podcasts out and about lately, and I know you've mentioned a few, and I know a couple are new and recent. I know Bob Dunn has a new one called WordPress Breakdown, which is pretty neat, and there's a couple other ones, but sort of give us the inside scoop on some of the new ones that you've come across lately.
Yes, as you mentioned, Bob Dunn, who you can typically find at bobwp.com, he just started a new show called WP Breakdown, which is cool, kind of double entendre of WordPress breaking down and kind of the breakdown of what it is. Very nice. My friend Adam Silver just started Kitchen Sink WP. I think he's well into his double digits as far as his episode count. So he basically covers, everything but the kitchen sink as far as WordPress goes. Themes, plugins, news, reactions, that kind of thing. There's a show from the UK that's just started called WP Content. That's Sam Bearson and Syed Wasim. Pretty cool show. And then Brian Clark from Copy Blogger, John Lee Dumas from Entrepreneur on Fire, and Saeed from WP Beginner, who I just met last weekend, just started a new series called WP Authorities. And that's a pretty cool podcast where for a while they were coming out with daily content. I don't know if they're still keeping up that flow. That's hard to consume that much content that fast. But they have very interesting perspectives from growing your audience to different conversion techniques. So these are kinds of, these guys are no joke as far as who they are on the podcast. And they're sharing their tips on exactly what's going on, as far as what they use to convert. Now, I'll warn you, they do have kind of private coaching sessions, and you do hear occasional commercials for stuff like that, but that's no big deal. The resources that you get out of it is well worth it.
And I bet that show won't have a problem succeeding. Those are three great, well-known, successful people on that show.
Yeah, I'd love to be on that series. That's really a great a great line that they've got going on. And, you know, there are other people that contribute as well, you know, throughout the different cycle of their release of the podcast. So, you know, those are some, but all in all, there's about 20 different active WordPress podcasts right now around the globe. There's
There used to be only four or five.
I know. And I used to be on half of them, but where's my rim shot? But, you know, and then there's some that are like Weekly Web Tools with Dave Jackson. And, you know, he mostly talks about WordPress, but he also gets on the fringe kind of tools that people as sort of the DIY webmaster, you know, get involved with. It even revolves around billing and, you know, managing clients and stuff like that. So,
I got you on the show and we're talking about podcasting. Give us a update on what's going on with your side project, WPR.FM, which is WordPress Radio.
Well, right now we're working on a mobile app, and we're trying to use AppPressor, and I'm quickly finding out the limitations of AppPressor is basically around what the phone gap kit is. So, you know, it's a learning process. The stream always works. I keep the stream updated, so anybody can access that at any time. But we're really shooting for a really cool kind of app, and then I'm trying to look around for some different kind of Genesis themes, and you even showed me one the other day that looked pretty cool. So I'm bringing everything together. It's difficult sometimes when it's an all-volunteer project from just me to find the time to keep that going as far as the site content updated, but I'm making strides.
Eventually, we're going to figure out a way to automate this. It'll just pull from the feeds.
Exactly, yeah, and I would just no-follow everything because it would be duplicate content, but I would want to make it available to the listeners.
Right. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of WordPress Weekly, the Friday 13th edition. Nothing terrible happened as far as I know, so we got that going for us. You can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes at wptavern.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, that's J-E-F-F-R-0, and you can follow Marcus Couch at MarcusCouch.com and also on Twitter at
MarcusCouch.
There you go. And until next week, have a safe weekend, everyone.